Tech Talk on RNIB Connect Radio.
Hello and welcome to Tech Talk from RNIB Connect Radio, our weekly chance to get together and just chat about all the latest technology from a blind and partially sighted perspective. If you want to get in contact with the show, please do. You can drop us an email to techtalk@rnib.org.uk. That's techtalk at rnib.org.uk. Coming up this week, we'll be hearing how technology has been making a difference to the lives of people working for the Office for National Statistics. We'll be catching up with Hable following the release of their speech label product. And Toby Davey will be telling us all about the Tonybox player, now available in the RNIB shop. We've got a full house this week. Hubert Pavalkovich, Jackie Brown and Natalie Curran all with me. Nice to have us all together. Hubert, I'll start with you. What's on your tech radar this week?
A short for me, but something quite nice. So quite often when you look at the new software releases for Apple, you know, new iOS, iPadOS and all the usuals, tvOS doesn't really get that much love and recognition, I've noticed. But a few interesting features that I've read about that are coming to tvOS, which I quite enjoy. They're quite minor, but they enhance the experience, especially for listening to music, for example. So new to tvOS from all the other Apple devices, Auto Mix from Apple Music is coming to the Apple TV, which I really like because it's one of these features that, okay, I mean, it's not exactly a superstar DJ, but I quite like that feature. I've been using it for a year and I quite like it. It, you know, works quite well for me. You can also, though, you can do this with the HomePod, but you will now be able to do this with the Apple TV, where you'll actually be able to update your Apple TV software through the Home app on your iPhone, which I quite like. That's the other little thing. There's a redesigned Podcasts app as well coming for the Apple TV, which will allow more support and kind of better experience for video-based podcasts. So that's kind of the three things I've picked out from the improvements coming to Apple TV, because it doesn't really get much mention. So I thought I'll do it for them.
Yeah, nice. Is this tvOS 27 or is this?
It is indeed. Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, it's cool. Coming in September, and of course the Apple TV HD, probably the oldest model that Apple are currently supporting, is being dropped. So if you do have that, you may want to consider upgrading. You don't have to, because you know they will still retain security for older software versions. But for me, I always want to have the latest software, one for features, but two mainly for security as well.
Like you said, though, it is nice to see tvOS getting some love, really, and getting all the, because either you don't get much about it in the software upgrades, or a lot of the stuff that comes to it are the kind of games, you know, like the Apple Arcade stuff, which, I mean, I've not got any interest in it because I imagine half of them aren't accessible. But also, I just never really hear that sort of stuff being talked about, like gaming on the Apple TV. Maybe it is quite popular, but I just never really seem to hear about it, to be honest.
I think it could work as a gaming device, but like you say, we don't really hear of many accessible game titles that are available for the Apple TV, whether it's part of Apple Arcade or standalone. So I think there was only one game once. There was this horror audio game that I think was available for the Apple TV when I've tried on the iPhone, which was like 2015. So apart from that, you don't really hear of many titles that are available on both systems.
Yeah. Well, there you go. If you've got an Apple TV, then some interesting stuff to look forward to in September coming up. Jackie, what about you?
Well, I heard some quite sad news last week in the blindness community. One of our founding friends, George Bell, who used to be the managing director of Technovision Systems, unfortunately, he passed away on the 24th of June, and he was 79. He'd been ill for some time. But what struck me is the amount of beautiful, warm, friendly and really endearing tributes that have come through for George. And we've been talking on a couple of the lists that I subscribe to about, you know, all the sort of how kind he was, how nice he was in the community and helping people. But George will always be remembered, I think, most for a device that came out in the mid-80s. It was called Eureka, and it was an Australian device, Braille input, but it was like an electronic secretary. And for those people that have never heard of it, trust me, it did so many things for its time. It was incredible. And it had a word processor, a notepad, a diary, calendar, you name it, this thing could do it. And this was before DOS even. I think it had the CPM operating system, but it had a very quirky Australian accent, very robotic. But it was a wonderful device. I had one for many years. And of course, anything to do with George Bell, the subject of Eureka comes up. It's very synonymous with George Bell. And so we've had a bit of a week of talking about him and his legacy, really, the different products that he brought into the UK as managing director of Technovision. He's renowned for Braille embossers, Braille paper, the Franklin Language Master Dictionary, which is a portable keyboard with the Merriam-Webster Dictionary and Thesaurus in it. So all these kind of things George brought in and sold. And also Duxbury, he had a huge influence over Duxbury. He wrote the program Swift, which allowed Duxbury users to work with it from Word. He was really innovative, but a really nice guy, a grumpy guy sometimes, but a lovely guy, and somebody who has been known throughout the industry for over 40 years.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it is sad news, of course, and I really hope this doesn't come across sort of disrespectful, because it's not intended to be, and I'd rather just be honest about these things, because I think this will resonate for a few people. When I first saw this news, I didn't recognise the name, but I kind of suspected it was one of these people who had really made a contribution, but I just didn't know he was behind it, if you know what I mean. And when I looked him up, when I looked a bit more about him, I was absolutely right. I mean, it's unbelievable. The Eureka products I'd never heard of, but there were so many things that, by the sounds of it, he kind of brought to the UK. Immediately, I saw, like, I recognised the Index range of embossers. I know they had those at school, and we used to use one for a bit when we had a business that involved doing some Braille work. There was, of course, the Duxbury Braille Translator, which has been around for many, many years, and it's still used. The Mountbatten Brailler, I used to use that back in the day at school, and, you know, he was, in, like, a key part of getting that in the UK, so just all these things. I think the list is pretty endless, really. I don't think you realise how much, you know, how much has been done in that space and how much he was behind. Yeah, an incredible legacy to leave behind, absolutely. And of course, our thoughts are with George's friends and his family and, well, everyone who was impacted by him, which I think, by the sounds of it, is basically all of us. So, absolutely incredible. Natalie, what have you got?
A bit of a mixed one this week. So I've heard Hubert talking on previous shows about different doggy fitness tracker things. Well, my friend for Christmas got me a collar with a cat tracker on it. Now, yes, it was Christmas, and yes, it has taken 6 months for us to actually get around to setting it up. Mainly because I gave up on my friend helping me do it and asked my brother to. So it's one of those ones I thought I could maybe do this myself, but I'm not sure I can face the headache if the setup's inaccessible, but the app's maybe not too bad or whatever. And you only need to set it up once. So my brother set it up for me. It wasn't too hard for him to do. And the app, I'd say, is mixed in terms of accessibility. So the collar, I think, is called CatTractive, and the app that goes with it is Tractive GPS. And it's meant to have lots of different features. So Obviously, you can see the current location, but also see the history of where your cat's been and what it's been up to, all the way from 1 hour up to 24 hours. You can see its health if you put in health data or paid for the extra subscription or whatever. Lots of different things. I'm not sure how many of those are actually accessible because when I tried to look on history, I wasn't getting anything. I will do a slight caveat of I might not have been getting anything because my cat Pepsi had ditched his collar in his bed, so he hadn't actually taken it anywhere. So I've given it a week, and every time I put the collar on him, he's taken it back off again. Now, I don't know if it's because I'm asking a bit too much, so I'm putting two collars on him, because especially at the same year, I still like him to have the anti-flea collar, and I've still got the one with the Apple tracker on it, so I thought at least I can track him that way if he does lose the other one. But twice now, he's ditched it. The other thing I should caveat that I was less than happy about is I paid for a 2 year subscription. So you could pay for 1 year. This is in order to have access to the app, which is the whole point of the collar. You can pay for 1 year, which was £8 a month, so a total of £96 a year, or 2 years, which was £5 a month, so £120 a year. I think there was another one that was 5 or 10 years, which I didn't do. So I paid for the 2 year subscription, and I expected, as I just described, to pay £5 every month for the next 2 years. No, they took £120 out of my account straight away.
I've seen a lot of apps that do this.
Oh, yeah.
Which I was not happy about. And my mum said, "Oh, don't panic, you'll be able to just cancel the subscription. There'll be a 2 week or 30-day cooling off period." I checked the initial email. No, there's no mention of that. I went online and it says you can cancel your subscription, but that will just cancel the auto renew. So I've had to message them to say, "Your app's not particularly accessible. I don't want to use it. Can you cancel my subscription?" And they've replied saying, "Welcome to our app. If you want to subscribe, click here." So that only came through this morning, so I can't tell you whether or not I'm able to unsubscribe there. But yeah, it's kind of, like I say, it's a mixed one. So for some people, you might decide that actually your cat's well enough behaved and will keep the collar on, and to be able to see where they are at that moment in time is useful enough. But like I say, I don't think the other features are great. Well, sorry, I definitely don't think the history feature is accessible at all. And the other elements of the app are kind of doable but clunky, you know, where you get things that you're not sure if it's a button or just a word, images that haven't been hidden. It's all a bit messy, but it is doable if that's what you want to do. But it was one of those ones that I was a bit frustrated because I was like, I could have seen this coming. And I know my friend is trying to do the right thing, but sometimes it's, we're the ones who are visually impaired. We're the ones who know best what's going to work. Because I felt a wee bit that way with the Meta Ray-Bans, because that was a gift as well. And I know you guys really love them, but I just wear them as normal glasses. I don't ever turn them on, which to a lot of people would seem like an epic waste, but I just don't love them. They're not for me.
Fair enough. I think it's weird, isn't it? I don't even know how you can describe this, but we just sort of get this feeling of like certain products just won't work. Do you know what I mean? Do you guys get this? Like you'll hear about a product or you'll see a product.
Well, quite often the page itself, the product description page itself, if it says see image,
You
you can rule that
could,
one out,
yeah.
can't
Or if a map is mentioned, it's like, oh, there we go. You can see where your cat's
Oh
been
yeah,
on the
that.
map history, so yeah, that's gonna help.
Yeah, that's not gonna work.
Well, that's exactly it, Hubert. The history thing is a map. It's kind of varied because when I was trying to unsubscribe, I was on the website as opposed to the app, and it was just all a bit messy. Like I say, doable but slow and messy. And I thought, if I actually did want to track you on a regular basis, this isn't how I'd want to do it. You know, at least with Find My, it's not brilliant, but I can ask Siri, and then when it says your cat was here 24 hours ago, I can open the app and get a more recent update. Like I say, for some people it might be that actually you think, no, it sounds good enough, my cat's a wee monkey and gets up to all sorts. It would be good to be able to track it. The other thing I should say is you can share the location with family and friends. And I thought, okay, that would be worth paying for, even if I can't track him. But no, it's not as simple as that. Your family or friend has to download the app, create an account, and pair it with your cat's collar. You can't just share their location with them. But if you are interested, and I can't vouch for the magnification quality of it, so apologies there. But I think the collar was called Cat Tractive, and the app that goes with it is Tractive GPS. And it's Tractive with TRACTIV, no E, GPS.
It's annoying because they're good products, they're just not accessible. With the subscription thing, was that on the iPhone where you subscribed to it?
Yes, it was.
Yeah. Try contacting Apple because they should be able to pull it back because the subscription's managed by Apple when you do that.
Well, I don't know. Well, maybe I'll see because, like I say, it was my brother who set it up for me. But I will try with the company again, and if need to be, I'll do it through Apple or possibly I actually paid as it happens through PayPal. And they have a bit of protection there as well. So if needs be, I'll go through them.
That's a good tip in general, though. If you do subscribe to something and you do it through an iOS app, then Apple partly manage the subscription as well. So if that sort of thing does happen, you can sometimes get in touch with Apple. I think, to be fair, I think they say try with the company first, but then if not, just get in touch with Apple and explain what happened, and they should refund it. I've done it before as well, where they don't make that clear. I had to get a new dishwasher this week, or last week, which was not fun on the old bank balance. But this was the first time that I tried the deep research thing on Gemini. So this is where it will research, rather than just giving you a sort of an answer, it will actually research different sites and pull together different results, different options, and give you almost a report kind of thing. So because I didn't have the patience for scrolling through all the different stores and all the different dishwasher types and getting past the images and reading the descriptions, especially when things like dishwashers and washing machines and stuff, it'd be like, oh, this is the Bosch Series 4 37G3XT VDD Elite Plus dishwasher. They mean nothing, these model numbers. I don't know what. So I thought, I can't be bothered with this. So I went on to Gemini. I tried the deep research. I said, I'm looking for a new dishwasher. It needs to be integrated. I'd like to go with these two particular brands because they're what I've used before and I've had good experiences with. This is my budget. I think I specified a couple of other things as well. Physical buttons, I think I said. And it said, okay, research it. And I said, search these two stores in particular, but feel free to give other sites as well if you can. So it said, okay, I'll notify you when it's done. You can now close this tab. So I closed it down and got on with what I was doing. 10 minutes later, sure enough, I got a notification from Gemini saying your document is now ready. I'd specified it to make it accessible as well, that I was using a screen reader and stuff. Went in and it was a PDF, but it was so well structured. It had headings for the different sections. It had the different pros and cons and summaries of costs and stuff in like a proper accessible table. And then it had like a summary of what it would recommend, and basically it had done everything that I told it to, sorted it from lowest to highest in terms of price and pros and cons and everything. It was really, really good. It did start off by saying, these are the best results I could find. However, your budget and your other requirements do leave you with quite a lot of constraints, to which I was like, yeah, okay, I'm well aware of that. Sorry, I'm not made of money. But it was brilliant. It just gave me all the results, all the relevant links and everything. And I did obviously verify everything. So I had a look at the descriptions and stuff myself separately. Jess verified the photos and the measurements to make sure it would fit. It was incredible. it was the easiest, because I've always been kind of skeptical about shopping using AI, but it worked. It was absolute, I couldn't fault it. It was absolutely fantastic.
Nice. Glad that worked out. I think when it works, it works really well. When it doesn't, it's just as frustrating as normal shopping.
Yeah. And obviously you could ask follow-up questions as well, which was cool. So I did, because I'm only on the free plan, I did that research thing, did just instantly, I instantly hit my usage limit on the actual research side of things. But I could, it did fall back to like the just general chat, and I could ask questions about the report. So it couldn't go off and do, so I couldn't say like, okay, well, try finding this and add it to the report. It couldn't do any further research, but I could ask about different things in the report itself. You know, like, okay, what does this mean? And, you know, stuff like that. So yeah, it was good. It was a hell of a lot easier. I can say that it took, what would have taken hours, took probably about half an hour, including waiting for it to do it and then just reading through the report. So can highly recommend that one if you've got access to it. Well, a lot to get into this week. As always, stick with us. This is Tech Talk. Time now for a bit of a catch up with Hable. We've spoken to these guys a couple of times on the show about the Hable One and the Hable Easy, but they've had a few other things going on recently, and joining me now is Luke Jansen. Luke, good to have you with us on Tech Talk.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me on.
So for those who, as I said at the top there, we've spoken to you guys and about the Hable product a couple of times, but for those who are kind of new to this, just very quickly give us a bit of background to Hable and what you do.
So at Hable, we develop products for people with a visual impairment, which started out with the Hable One, which you've featured here before, which is a keyboard to control your smartphone. And now we are working really hard to expand our portfolio also with other products. And we focus on innovation and more affordable products instead of the more high-end, high-value products that are out there in the market.
So the Hable One is kind of a Braille input keyboard, and then the Hable Easy, of course, takes that kind of smartphone control and brings it into a more, what would you say, kind of a more simplified kind of control method, is that how you'd describe it?
Yes, that's how I would like to describe it. That's also why we call it the Hable Easy. We want to make smartphone control as easy and convenient as possible for people. And when we launched the Hable One, we got the request a lot about how can we make it easier for people who do not know Braille. And that is basically the idea behind the Hable Easy. So how can we make this controller also work for people who are unable to do input through Braille? And we managed to do that with the Hable Easy.
Yeah, fantastic. And the latest range of products that you've released, in a little bit of a different area, I would say, is the speech label products. Do you want to tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, that's correct. It's a little bit different, although it still evolves around a smartphone. So it's also very logical, I think, for Hable to develop this product. So Speech Label is one of our latest products, and it's a free app that you can download on Android and iOS, and it helps you to label anything in your life with your own voice message, so through audio, but also with text. And where the app and the software on the phone is completely free, we sell the labels that you need for it to work. So these are either QR codes or NFC labels.
And so on these, you can kind of record these labels in your own voice, and can you basically put whatever you want on them in that case?
Yeah, you can put whatever you want on them. We've heard some fantastic use cases from people that use the speech label system, from very short notes. A very common use case, for example, is the use in Tupperware, where they describe what's in their Tupperware box. But we've also had people that do long messages that they stick to cards and send to people. And so we've had all kinds of different use cases. But you can record anything you want with your own voice.
When I first heard about this, the thing that came to mind, and I don't know how much how well known this was internationally, but there's a product here, and I think it's still going, called the Pen Friend, which was very much this sort of thing. You had these little labels, these physical labels, and then this interesting little kind of pen-shaped device. And very similar thing. You tapped it to the label, held down a little button, you could record whatever you want in your own voice. And then when you tapped those labels, it would play it back. Feels like this is kind of bringing that into the modern day a little bit, I suppose, and tying it into the smartphone, which many of us have already got.
Yeah, that's exactly what Speech Label does. The Pen Friend, it's called. The product you're referring to, there are multiple of these products in the market that give you a device to audio label things. And with the Speech Label system, you just don't need an additional device, and you can just use your smartphone, which most people carry on them all the time. So it's just way more convenient. But it's also way more affordable because you don't need to purchase another device. So that's also a big reason to for us to develop Speech Label. And also because it's in an app in a smartphone, there is just way more optionality. So where a device like that can only record audio, our system also allows you to give labels titles, to give text to the labels as well. So if you don't like to use audio, you can just use the screen reader or the talkback or voiceover function to read out the labels to you, or even through Braille. So there is just a lot more optionality. And what's also a good feature of Speech Label is that there is an option to make your labels public, which enables it that if you make a label and you make it public, then other people with the Speech Label app can scan the label and they can hear your audio label, or they can import your label, so to say. And that opens another range of possibilities with the system. So it just has a lot more optionality compared to the devices that are out there.
That's interesting. Yeah, I was going to ask about that, the ability to almost share labels between people.
Mm-hmm.
So that is a pretty cool feature. So what sort of thing can these things be used for then? I mean, you touched on people using them for like Tupperware. Can these be kind of refrigerated and frozen and things like that? If people, I tend to kind of batch cook a bunch of meals, mm-hmm. and freeze them for a week or two, and then I've got them just ready to go. Can it be used for things like that? Will it survive that sort of condition?
Yes, it will. And you're not the only one who does a lot of meal prepping, because this is something we hear a lot, that people use our labels for prep meals. So we sell different kinds of labels, but especially the stickers that we sell, they are safe to put in a freezer, but they're also dishwasher proof. So you could label your Tupperware with them. You could put them in the freezer, and you can use these labels for a very, very long time. You can relabel them, so that's also you don't have to use a new label every time you put something new in a Tupperware box. You can just use the app to put a different audio message or a different label to the sticker. This is definitely one of the more common use cases of the labels, but people use it for everything that occurs in daily life. We see a lot of people that use it for collections, that they want to label everything. We also see that people just use it for general organization and structuring in their life, to know, you know, what products are where and where did you put it. The different pots of herbs and spices is a common use case. So there are multiple ways of using the system.
What about kind of laundry? Because that's something that always comes to mind, you know, labeling mm-hmm. different clothes up to kind of say, oh, this is a black shirt with this pattern or whatever it might be. Can they do that? Do you sell any that are kind of washproof?
Yes, we sell one type of label for this, which is the buttons. So we sell multiple types of label, and one of the options that we sell are laundry buttons. And these are tiny buttons you can sew into your clothing. Most people want this to be on a discrete location in their clothing. And within the button is a very small NFC chip. And you can use that with the speech label system to label your clothing. So this is specifically made for laundry and textiles and things that you do in the washing machine.
And I take it this doesn't change anything with the way that you would wash them. It's like, for example, it would survive on a hot or intensive wash if it needed to, and it would survive going through the dryer and things like that.
Oh, absolutely. It's just a tiny button. And it's very sturdy as well. So I think this button can survive almost anything. I always say, well, I think the clothing will break first. That's what I think if you wash
Fair
them
enough.
often.
Yeah, it's good to know. Can you just give us a little bit of an overview? Like you mentioned the different types of labels. Can you give us a bit of an overview of like the different types that are available?
So we sell four different types. One we have already discussed, which are the laundry buttons. So these are specifically for laundry and washing machine items. Then we have the NFC stickers. These are flat stickers that have an NFC chip in them. These are primarily used for the same as the other stickers that we have, which are barcode stickers. But we've through our testing and through working with the system, we noticed that some people prefer to use NFC and some people prefer to use barcode stickers. So these are absolutely the same. They have the same function, but they are just being handled differently by the phone. So that's the main difference. So those are the NFC stickers, and then we also have the barcode stickers. And then there is a fourth option, which are thick, larger barcode stickers. And these are mainly used in environments where other people have to scan or have to find where the sticker is. So I always give the example that at a coffee machine, for example, where you can use a sticker like that to explain how the coffee machine works, or that you can explain how certain things work in a more public environment, or in a house where you want to be able to see or feel the stickers from a distance.
Ah, yeah, that's interesting. That's a good use case, actually. Again, I suppose that another benefit of being able to have those shared or those public labels.
Yeah,
Yeah.
exactly. We see these bigger barcode stickers with also being used a lot in community living, for example, where multiple people live in a house and they have to label, shared kitchen areas or something like this. Then this public function, becomes very very useful. And also, if you live together with other people, sometimes you live together with sighted people, then they can also make labels for you and vice versa. So that's something we see a lot.
And if people are interested in buying these, you're now distributing through the RNIB as well.
Yes. So RNIB is our reseller in the UK. You can buy them from their website. And it's also good to mention, I think, that if you want to try it out, we also offer a starter pack that has all four of the different labels together. So you can just find out which label is best for you.
Yeah, fantastic. And of course, it's not just speech label that you've been up to. You've also released a new range of tactile stickers. Do you want to just tell us about those briefly?
Yes. So at Hable, we're constantly trying to expand our portfolio. So we're working on a couple of new things. And the most recent addition to our portfolio are Stacktiles, which are tactile stickers. They've been very well received so far, but we've only just launched them in the past 2 months. So this is really a new addition to our portfolio. And these are tactile stickers that work on touch interfaces, that stick really, really well. They can be cleaned with a damp cloth, and they can be used to mark almost anything in your house. You can think of marking interfaces to appliances, keyboards. People use it to just label anything with tactile stickers. We also have a Braille sticker option where people can use Braille stickers to label things. So there are different options for tactile stickers that we now offer as well.
And just to avoid a bit of confusion there, so the speech label are kind of they are physical labels, but you can then record messages or record text onto them. The Stacktiles are just physical, kind of like bump-ons or lock dots. They're just the physical,
Yes.
Markings.
Yeah.
Like they don't have any kind of smart functionality to them.
Yeah, I think it's very good to add. So yeah, the stack tiles are just stack tile stickers. There's a little bit more to it. Like I can talk for hours about the tactile stickers. There's a lot of technology involved to make them, but yeah, as a user, they are just stack tile stickers. So it's good that you make that distinction. They have nothing to do with the speech label lineup, so that's really a different product. Yeah.
And if people are interested in the speech label or the stack tiles or just Habl in general, how can they, where can they go? How can they get in contact with you?
Well, you can always contact us through our website, which is www.iamhabl.com. And on our website, you can also find all our products. The speech label products are available on the RNIB website. So I would also recommend to go there. They'll have the all information on speech label on their website. But if you want to follow what we are working on and see our other products, you're more than happy to contact us through our own website as well.
If you are interested in the speech labels from the RNIB, if you go to shop.rnib.org.uk, you should be able to find all the details on there. Well, Luke, it's been a pleasure talking to you, as always. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
The Office for National Statistics collects and publishes statistics related to the UK economy, population and society, from employment figures to migration statistics and much more besides. The ONS is also an RNIB Visibly Better employer. Joining me now are James Evans from the Data Architecture Division and Cowan Blake, Divisional Director of Corporate IT and Services. Welcome in both.
Hello.
Hello, Howell.
Well, James, if we can start with you. Tell us a bit about your role with the ONS and what it entails and what kind of tech you're using to get the job done.
Oh, my goodness. So I've had many roles over the years in ONS. I should probably say that I've got life experience of sight loss. So registered blind from birth and went to a school for the blind and a college for the blind in Hereford, the Royal National College. Many of your listeners may well have attended there soon. So I've worked in multiple roles over the years. I've worked at a processing centre. So I came in as an AO, processing and calls and thankfully, I've had a few promotions has taken me to working on GDP, international trade, environment, and latterly capability. And tech has been absolutely critical to the successes that I've had. Absolutely could not have achieved anything like I've achieved without it. So at the moment, I've used multiple things over the years. Currently, what I'm using is a kind of curved screen. So that sounds quite basic, but essentially what that does, it allows me, all my vision is in the center. So it allows all the information I need to be focused in the range that I can see it, rather than what I was having to do before was like, you'd think I'm watching a tennis match from going from left to right, from left to right. And your listeners will identify with that, I think. The most important tech tool I use at the moment is my iPad. So iPad Pro, one of the few people in ONS who has them. I work with a lot of data architects and data engineers, Howell, and believe me, if they have an opportunity to draw a diagram, they will do, regardless of what the subject is. So there's a hell of a lot of pictures that I've got to come to terms with. iPad is amazing. I can just take a picture of it and you can do the pinch and enlarge or the three finger tap. Again, your listeners will know all about it and it's amazing. Magnification is fantastic on it. It's also got things like it's voiceover on it, speech to text for when I'm kind of recording things as well. And that's really incredibly valuable when I go into presentations, as I say, with these very clever people who draw a lot of complex diagrams.
And are these bits of kit that you're using in your personal life as well, James? Which way around does it usually go? Did you take familiar items from home and then use them in work, or do you find yourself enjoying bits of kit in work and then replicating your setup maybe at home?
It's an interesting. I would say it's a two way thing. Obviously, I'm not doing the things at home as I'm doing in work. So there's distinctly different challenges. I'm not looking at complex models and diagrams at home, thankfully. But I do in work. So what I find myself doing is liaising with the tech bar, and there's a tech bar that anyone can just walk up to, and that's what Kindwin's in charge of. And I'll kind of, it's very informal, have a chat with them. I'm having difficulty in this particular aspect of my job, and they will then try and find ways around it. So an example of that was last year when Microsoft 365 just put a fix on, and that changed the resolutions ever so slightly on my screen. Now, everyone else in the ONS pretty much didn't notice it, but it was a big difference for me. Big difference like that inch on the screen was a big difference for me. So went around as I'm accustomed to doing now, discussed it with the tech bar, and then they would usually come to sit with me, have a try and test the resolutions on the screen to get it absolutely right. And that's how we came up with the solution of a curved screen to centralize everything, which is really useful.
And Kindwin, how do colleagues make their accessibility needs known, I suppose, on day one, when they first start with ONS? How do you make sure that everyone gets what they need to do their best work?
Okay, so what we usually do, Howell, is work closely with IT. So at recruitment, with HR. So at recruitment stage, any sort of adjustments are sort of made known to recruitment. And then we work very hard to fulfill those adjustments so that on day one, the person can be effective and not feel like they've been given something they can't use. That works in the main, but that relies on the person being open and stating what adjustments they need. We can ask the question, but it depends what they say. What we also do is ask maybe what devices they are using at home to see whether or not there's alignment with what we use as our portfolio of devices within the ONS.
And how do you find that conversation goes? Is it more often that your IT department suggests new bits of technology to employees, or do you find that maybe they're coming to you to ask for new bits of kit that they know about?
A bit of both. Again, what we're currently doing is we've introduced two new lighter laptops to our device portfolio, and we're currently configuring those. But what we will do is roll out, and we'll make sure that we have people from the ONS Disability Network as testers, so that we get a good range of testers, a good range of feedback, so that we can sort of maybe even provide different types of devices, but also configure so that it can be used with any sort of assisted technology, for example. Because, you know, if you've got JAWS screen reader or things like that, whilst you can put it on the device, it does need subtle configuration. One size doesn't fit all.
Yeah, of course. James, I mean, you've been with the ONS for 30 years now. You must have seen some incredible changes. How has the accessible technology changed in your time?
Hugely. So whereas before, when I first started, it was basically my accessibility was very printer based, where other people were perhaps reading on screen or printing out A4 paper. I was having to print out kind of A3 paper, large font, and that was perfectly fine. Helped me get done what I needed to get done. As things progressed, the paper office is phased out. I've still got access to a printer, which is great, but now it's very much screen readers, pictures, and voice, and those magnification aids are amazing as well.
Was there one sort of big jump that made a particular difference in your workplace?
I think I'd have to say the iPad. It's amazing because when the portfolio of the ONS changed and they were starting to reduce the number of iPads available, I was really worried that I was going to lose my iPad because I rely on it so much. And the thing with the iPad, you almost, if you're a casual user, you almost don't notice the accessibility on there, because it's almost like they've integrated them. Then you can tell they're not an add-on. They've actually been designed with that in mind. So I'll be scrolling or reading some information, and it could be my email or it could be whatever. And if something's particularly small, it's literally one three-finger tap, and it enlarges the old thing. And that is a game changer. Without, so before that, I would have to kind of say, okay, I can't see this properly. I'd have to print it out, bring it back to the desk, get a magnifying glass, come a big magnifying glass, put that on there, read it incredibly slowly. So them supplying me with the iPads has been amazing for me.
Technology changes so rapidly. Kaiman, how does the ONS keep up to date, but also make sure that the tech and the systems that you're using are accessible to all staff?
Okay, so I'm in a lucky position, I suppose, really. So as Deputy Director of the Corporate IT and Services, I am also a sponsor for the ONS Disability Network. And this network is responsible for many improvements and changes across the office, as well as providing support for its members. Again, I'm in the right place to actually promote and advocate for greater accessibility. So when we look at sort of the ever-changing technology landscape, I sort of bring it to the Disability Network and ask for volunteers. I also talk to James about things to see how whether or not he would like to test. And you know, he's a very good tester. He's very very good at testing things. So, for example, James spoke about his curved screen earlier. I mean, when he was looking at screens, because clearly the screen he had wasn't the best for him, we actually took a number of screens off desks in the office, and my team took it round to James, and he had them 48 hours to just see which was the best. And then once he'd sort of selected it, we went out and purchased one. So we work together. It's very much a collaboration.
Kaiman, ONS has been working with RNIB on recommendations on making the workplace more accessible. What kind of impact has that had?
It has had a great impact. Very often, staff were unable to read emails and other types of documentation because the font couldn't be used by things like JAWS. ONS has now taken a conscious decision to implement the RNIB recommendation, and all of our Office 365 products in ONS has been changed to use an Arial 12-point font by default. It's not just about the IT. We have implemented smarter workplaces. So I've got another colleague in our Titchfield office who is visually impaired, and he has a desk that rises. So he's able to look very closely at the screen to actually see what he's doing, which he couldn't do from a chair. And the second thing is that we've also invested, and we continue to invest, in smarter meeting rooms. So we've got big sort of TV screens on the wall. So James talked about presentations and receiving presentations in advance. They're also projected in most meetings on the big screen, so that anyone with who is visually impaired could sit closer to the screen or see it because it's magnified on the screen. I wondered if that would help as well.
And sometimes, you know, for various reasons, the office has to do, whether it's a structure change or accommodation, and there's office moves. And I think I've been on every floor in this office now, but what ONS will always do is come up to me and say, right, okay, we need to move to this room, James. Where is best for you to sit? And natural light is a big thing for me. It's a lot different from artificial light. So I'll always kind of, they'll take me around the room that we're looking to. I look at the various windows, look, you know, figure out when the sun is coming up, when the sun is going down, the kind of things that other people don't think about, and say, look, this would be a really best place for me. If I could sit here, that would be incredibly helpful. So as I'm speaking to you now, got a lovely bit of natural light coming in through the window that puts a lot of natural light on the papers I'm looking at. Really helpful. It's little things like that you wouldn't necessarily think about, right?
James, we've talked about it a little bit. How is the data that you need to do your job made accessible? You mentioned, you know, things that are maybe unlabeled. You know, I'm imagining a lot of PDFs and unmarked tables. Are there some challenges there?
Yeah, there are some challenges. So, for example, on a day-to-day basis, people go into, and of course it's virtual now mostly, so you go into your meetings, and there's a lot of presentations, and some of those slides are really cluttered and they got a lot of information on them and I can't see them properly, and other people are saying, well, look at that information, as a spike there or whatever. So you're basically, you're working workarounds, right? So some time ago I just said, right, from now on I want pre-access to all the slides before they go up. So that gives me time to actually go into the slide, and everyone's got access to them now, not just me, and kind of have a look at the information before I get in the meeting, so I can do the subject of the meeting justice and also myself justice. And I found those kind of fixes as well. Well, when you tend to look at them and you put those little fixes in place for a disabled person, whatever the disability may be, you often find it actually benefits the rest of the working organization as well. So it's not just a kind of, oh, okay, we'll do this for James, and it's a bit of a pain. Other people can actually do it as well. And more recently, we've got Copilot coming in now as well, and we're using that more and more. So whereas before, you'd have this, some people love writing really, really long emails. Okay, and it's, I don't know, you look at it and you think, oh my goodness me, there's a lot of paragraphs you've got to read. So, you know, we're getting into the stage now where Copilot can summarize that information for you as well. So, and people often don't think about it as an accessibility tool, but it absolutely is. And I think AI going forward is going to absolutely help the disability community to have far more opportunity even than they've got now.
Well, I was going to just ask about AI, James. I wasn't sure whether inside the ONS that is something that's used often. Cameron, is it, you know, are you looking into ways that AI can have a positive impact on blind and partially sighted staff members like James, or is there maybe some resistance as well?
No, there's no resistance, quite the opposite, Howell. We partnered with Microsoft probably about a year and a half ago, and we piloted Hendra's Copilot licenses, for example. And so we had some really good feedback, particularly from colleagues who needed accessibility software and had accessibility needs. What we then decided to do was invest in Copilot for every one of our staff. So now we've got over 5,000 licenses and everyone has Copilot on their desktop. So even sort of summarising, if you are late to go into a meeting, you can sort of get a quick summary of what's happened. As James said, it's invaluable going forward.
James, aside from AI, is there something that you're maybe already thinking about for the future of your role? Is there a piece of hardware or software that would make your work more efficient or maybe just more enjoyable?
I'm going to keep hold of my iPad for as long as I can, and that's really comfortable. Aside from AI, that's a really difficult question. I think AI is where the next benefits are, Howell, to be honest with you. So, for example, we're looking at doing internships for the RNIB at the moment. We're going to be taking on 8 people for three months over the next 12 months. And I think historically, what we've done, understandably, is had a job that's been designed pretty much for fully sighted people and put the adaptations on the end. Kind of what I'm thinking of at the moment is reviewing everything we're doing, seeing that the AI is available now, and going back to square one, you know, is there an opportunity to review why we do things in the job that we currently do? How does AI change things? And it's been really rewarding, because when I'm looking at the jobs process for these interns, we're asking ourselves, you know, how would we design this job for a person who can't see at all? And that's been, obviously, that's going to be beneficial for the interns who come in, but it's been massively beneficial for my team as well, you know, building up that empathy and their own capability to be able to do that.
And I think it's fair to say, James, isn't it, that the colleagues that we are sort of taking on over the next sort of 12 to 18 months, conversations have already started with them on their preferred IT. So that we can make sure that we've got an IT portfolio that they can use.
Absolutely. So we're liaising with the RNIB because it'll primarily be, you know, the RNIB clients who are applying for these things. They're very well versed, obviously, in the kind of software. So we're looking to see if it's possible, however, because 3 months isn't long. We don't want to waste a single day of it. That is there options to have JAWS and Zoom or whatever it is preloaded on their laptops before they're given to the successful candidate to do the work. What we've done as well, we've mocked up the work. Our information and data is confidential, so we've had to mock up both the process and the work, and we've provided RNIB with that, so it gives them a really good indication of what we're going to be asking of the clients and what their clients are going to be getting into for day one. Mm.
Well, lots to look forward to. From the Office for National Statistics, James Evans and Camion Blake, thanks to you both for sharing your experiences and for joining us here on RNIB Connect Radio.
That's great. Thank you.
Toby Davey is up next with news about an accessible audio player for visually impaired children that has just been added to the RNIB shop.
We are browsing again through some of the products that you can find in the RNIB online shop now here on RNIB Connect Radio through shop.rnib.org.uk/connect. As once more, I am joined by Charlie Jarvis, RNIB's shop spine administrator. Hi, Charlie. How are you?
Hello there. Thanks for having me.
Well, we are looking at the Tonies range of products that have just been added to the RNIB shop, which include the Toniebox 2 audio player and the Tonies audio figurines. So, Charlie, do tell me a little bit more about the Toniebox 2 player, as it is a child-centred device that's, I suppose, aimed at ages 1 to 9. And the device is completely accessible as there are no screens and it is controlled completely through touch too.
Absolutely. So just to give a bit of background about the Toniebox. So it's a robust squishy cube and it's designed to be used by children. They place a tactile magnetic Tony on the top and then either the story or the songs will play depending on what Tony's on it. And then it just has two little ears on top, similar to a cat, you might imagine. One is slightly bigger than the other, and that just controls your volume up and down. So if children wanted to listen on their own, they can have full control over the device without having any access to a screen. So the different book Tonies and cuddle Tonies are in the shape of a character from that story. So for example, the Gruffalo, Winnie the Pooh or Paddington Bear are examples that we have. And then each Tony box is actually supplied with what's called a creative Ruby Tony. And that is a red hooded character with cat ears. And that's quite special because unlike the other Tonies that already contain stories, this one you can record your own. So a child's sort of parents or grandparents, siblings can record their own stories or songs for the child to listen to. And then it's something that they can keep as sort of a memory and maybe play to their children one day. So that's quite a cool addition to the range that's on offer. And then just a bit more background. So children can control what they're listening to by tapping the box and it will skip a character or song. Tilting the box will fast forward or rewind the audio, and squeezing the ears of the box will adjust the volume. So the bigger ear is to turn the volume up and the smaller to turn it down. A full charge provides up to 10 hours listening via the built-in speaker or Bluetooth headphones, so they can listen out loud or take their Tony on the go and listen with headphones. And then to encourage healthy sleep habits, the Toniebox 2 has a sleep timer with a soft orange nightlight and also a sunrise alarm that wakes children up in the morning by like slowly brightening the light. So if they have some residual vision, for example, that is something that could be of benefit to them. So with the Toniebox 2 starter set, it'll include the box itself and then it also has a USB-C charging cable and the creative Tony Ruby that we discussed earlier. And then the boxes are available in a few different colours depending on your choice. So we have teal, red, pink, blue and grey. We have currently over 30 different Tony characters to choose from, so there's something in there for everybody, whether you like Disney, whether you like Cars, whether you like sort of classic fairy tales, if you like. There's something in there for everyone. So the cost of the starter set that includes everything we discussed above is £100. And then each of the standard story Tonys are £14.99. But then we also have what's called a cuddle Tony. So these are larger teddy bears almost. So they're full size teddy bears that children can cuddle. But then if they pop them on the top of the Tony box, it will read a story as well. An example of quite a popular one at the moment is Olaf from Frozen. And those are £25. But then we also have the Sleepy Nightlight Tonys. So they're again a cuddly toy but a nightlight as well, and those are £29.99. and a popular one that people are liking at the moment is the Penguin, which is very cute. So there's something in there for everybody.
They sound really good, and the great thing about the Tonys range is they weren't designed for blind or partially sighted people, and that's a sort of really interesting thing, that there are products out there that are accessible but not necessarily designed for blind or partially sighted people.
Absolutely, and I think there's loads of different groups that this could benefit. I mean, especially sort of younger children or children with learning difficulties even, because it's so simple to use that it gives everybody their independence. You're not relying on your parent to come and set the stories and to turn the volume up, for example. And I just think it's fascinating because each Tony is hand painted, so they're all, it's not something that's sort of mass produced on a line. Like, so much care goes into designing them that I think it's a really incredible product.
Do you find that from many sort of manufacturers that they, you know, sort of by not necessarily default, but sometimes they do produce a really accessible, you know, equipment or product or something like that without sort of necessarily realizing it?
I think so. I think there's lots of things out there that weren't specifically designed for blind and partially sighted people. But being visually impaired myself, like over the years, I've sort of trial and error of loads of different things on the market and just found things that work for me that aren't necessarily designed to be accessible, but have been. So recently I discovered an egg cracker, because I always get shells in my egg when I'm frying eggs, and this egg cracker is just amazing for helping me when I'm cooking. And that's not specifically designed, but it's something that's completely changed my life in making breakfast and things. So yeah, there's definitely things out there if you know what you're looking for.
Well, we must praise Tonys for producing this range of products. And to find out more about the Tonys range of products, including the Tony Box 2 audio player and many other products in the RNIB online shop, do go to shop.rnib.org.uk/connect. Well, thank you so much indeed, Charlie, for chatting with me again here on RNIB Connect Radio and telling me more about the Tonys range of products that people can find in the RNIB online shop.
Thank you.
And that's all we've got time for another week. Thank you so much, as always, for joining us. And if you've got anything that you want to get in touch with us about, any questions or any tips that you want to share, feel free to get in touch. techtalk@rnib.org.uk is our email address. Voice notes or written emails, definitely, always welcome. We'll be back with you, same time, same place, next week. But from me, Callum Stoneman, Hubert Pavalkovich, Jackie Brown and Natalie Curran, bye for now.
Bye.
Bye for now.
Bye.
See you next week.